Okay, so I place another homework that's due Friday, and we have to now make progress. This is a week with no exam, so we have to learn a lot of new material so that next week we can take another exam. And today is another super hot day, and I love it. And it's hot like this. There's of course other people who hate it. Anyway, because summer always invokes good memories in my mind. You know, when I was a kid, summer vacations were the happy time, so I like hot weather because of that. Alright, so now we're going to go and study the propagation of transverse electromagnetic waves in lossy media. By that, we mean media in which there is a sigma, there is a conductivity. And normally, that conductivity is a positive quantity, and you generate a current vector, J, that is parallel to electric field vector, E. And if the incoming field is transverse field, then J will be a transverse current, and that will not generate charge accumulation, and because of that, we can take rho to be equal to zero. And also, we're going to work in the frequency domain. We went and discovered the frequency domain counterpart or the phasor counterpart of the Maxwell's equation. So we want to work with those equations in a sort of a conducting medium. What are our equations? First of all, there is the divergence of B that is equal to rho. Now I'm writing these things as phasors, but as I just said, I'm going to state my rho to be equal to zero. And we went through last time, if we take rho equal to zero, the rho phasor to be equal to zero, continuity equation implies that the J phasor is divergence free, and that is all consistent. Then J is sigma E. If sigma is constant, divergence free J means divergence free E, and divergence free E means that I can set this to be zero on this side. In fact, I can just write it in terms of E, because also the medium is homogeneous, and I can pull the epsilon in and out and cancel it out from this equality with no problem. Divergence of B is also equal to zero. And I can write it by the same token as like this. Not that it matters that much in what follows. And then the following is important. Curl of E phasor is equal to, what is it? Minus dB dt becomes minus J omega B, and B is mu H. So I have minus J omega mu H tilde. Okay? And then I have curl of H. This is my phasor H. That is equal to J phasor plus J omega epsilon. There are two types of J's, of course. There is the capital J for current density and the little J for the complex number. You know that electrical engineers use J instead of I?
Right.
And the whole reason for that is if you ask, why are mathematicians and physicists, why are you guys using J? Because I is current in electrical engineering. But J is also current, so we didn't save anything. So it's all confusion anyway. So sorry about all the J's in my sentence. You have to understand which J I'm talking about. All right, so this J plus the other J, omega epsilon E. All right, so this is the full set of equations. And then in a conducting medium, this is not an imposed current. It's one that is generated by the electric field, and we're going to write that as sigma times E, because we are saying that in conducting media, generalized Ohm's law applies. There is a conductivity sigma that is measured in Siemens per meter or mols per meter, and that's what it is. Okay, so all for
should that be an E?
Yeah. All for homogeneous media, but also all for what we call our isotropic media. Okay, J is in the direction of current and not at funny angle. So you can have crystals and anisotropic media, Earth's ionosphere, where there's a magnetic field that breaks the symmetry, where the J can be not parallel to E. Well, those are things that we'll be studying later, not this year, not in this class. Any questions? So now, these two equations are there. They are not helping us much. They will in a moment, okay? Well, what I want to do is continue this, assuming first sigma is equal to zero, yet recover our relationships for beta, if you will, and eta that we already know, and then make a substitution. I will subsequently replace epsilon by epsilon plus sigma over j omega, and old relationships will give me the new relationships that matter in this new context. Okay? So that's what I'm going to do. So I, of course, therefore, also for a moment, disregard this. I will bring that in with this trick later down. Any questions? So now, what do I want to do? So I want to sort of like reduce, combine these two equations so that H is eliminated. I have a single equation for E. That's our wave equation. But now our wave equation will show its counterpart in the phasor domain. There is not going to be any ddt's because ddt's disappear. They became j omegas. So what do? I continue with what I did before. I will take the curl of this equation, and then I will have curl of E, okay? On the other side, I have minus j omega mu curl of H. And for curl of H, I'm going to bring this guy in, right? And that is going to give me, multiply this, j omega epsilon times the electric field E. All right? So then what else do we have? But curl of E is the gradient of divergence of E minus the Laplacian of E. This is using that identity that we pointed out earlier on. Here is where this guy comes into use, okay? Because divergence of E is equal to zero, I can disregard this guy, and then I can disregard these two signs, okay? But I have a J square. J square will bring me a negative number, minus one, and therefore, I at this point, can turn this like this, but there is another minus sign, and I can bring everything to this side. Then I say Laplacian of electric field plus, because minus sign, I take it to the other side, omega squared mu epsilon electric field is equal to zero. So this is the wave equation, but this is the wave equation now in the phasor domain. Okay, what did we do when we first encountered the wave equation? We said, let's find a solution. Let's find a non-zero solution. We assign a polarization. We consider a propagation direction, and we got some solution of that type. So why don't we just sort of like repeat that, okay, so that we get the same sort of a result. So let me then consider an electric field phasor that is polarized in, let's say, in x direction. That's what we did. And it is going to be and some dependence on z, so that it will be z propagating. I could also make it some dependence on y, then it would be y propagating, but I'm going to make some dependence on z. But let me continue a little bit. If this is only dependent on z, our Laplacian simplifies, okay? So then this becomes d squared dz squared e tilde plus omega squared mu epsilon e tilde. That's what it becomes, okay? And then this is a second order differential equation. We know that second order differential equations are always solved by exponential solutions. We know that the solution must be exponential. So we can say we can try out in this guy a solution that looks like this, e to the, let's say, gamma z. I will find out what gamma is. Okay? That gamma will turn out to be plus or minus j beta. That's what we are shooting for. Any questions here? Okay, so then I can also get rid of the vector portion here. Obviously, if my E is like this, there is only an E sub X. There is no E sub Y. There is no E sub Z. So this is just that E sub X equal to zero. Okay, but they are still phasors. And I have a phasor there. Okay, phasor is a quantity that if I multiply with E to the J omega T and take its real time, it's going to bring me something that is cosinusoidal. And that's going to happen. Any questions? All right, so then we continue. When we make this substitution, in other words, when we take this E sub X and try it in this equation, what do we get? We get the algebraic equation, gamma squared plus omega squared mu epsilon is equal to zero, right? So that times E sub X is equal to zero. If E sub X itself is interesting and non-zero, then this has to be equal to zero. So how do we solve this? Well, we go first to the other side. Gamma squared is minus omega squared mu epsilon. So we need to take then the square root. When we take the square root of anything, plus minus possibilities come into picture, and that is good. In this context, those plus minus possibilities corresponds to waves propagating either in plus z direction or minus z direction, and that's the way it should be. But we have also a minus sign here, so we have to consider the square root of minus 1, which is j. Or we could say plus or minus j, okay? And But then, let me write it this way. So I go gamma on this, by taking the square root, I have gamma on this side. In this side, I have a j omega square root of mu epsilon. I also have a minus j, right? But I'm going to stick with the plus j for purposes of having a definite definition for gamma rather than two definitions. But I will distinguish the possibilities of plus and minus propagation that is coming out because of that result by explicitly putting minus and plus gamma z there. Okay? Clearly, with the minus sign in the exponent here, this revised solution, and it wouldn't have mattered because the squaring would have gotten rid of my minus or plus choices in going from the assumed solution into satisfying the differential equation. The minus sign is going to be associated with propagation in plus z direction, and the plus sign with minus z direction as before. And here is our beta. So we have recovered everything that we know. Okay? So we do have, after all, e to the minus or plus j beta z. Okay? And our beta is, of course, in this context, the beta that we are familiar with, omega squared of mu epsilon, which also can be written as omega over beta as 1 over square root of mu epsilon. And in free space, that becomes the speed of light. Any questions? And what else can we do? We have only the E solution. What about the corresponding H solution? So we can then take our E solution and visit either of these equations and solve for H. And if we do that, I'm not going to do that, what would you get? You would get the intrinsic impedance relationship. Okay? So the corresponding H in this case would be polarized in y direction. That's the other thing that you would find. Okay, there is a 90 degree rotation. And it would be e to the minus or plus gamma z with the same gamma divided by eta. And that eta would be square root of mu over epsilon. And we would have needed directions. And that would be plus and minus y hat for the two propagating version, one propagating plus direction, the other in minus direction. And that plus and minus should adhere with the right-hand rule. All stuff that we have learned before, okay? Except that we repeated the derivation in the frequency domain without dealing with time, but only with space variables here. Any questions? All right, so now we move on, okay? So, in the more important world of conducting media, we start with this equation and modify it as follows. J omega square root of mu, but we replace epsilon with epsilon plus sigma over J omega. We have to deal with a new kind of a gamma, okay? The previous gamma turned out to be purely imaginary. It was a J beta. This guy is not going to be purely imaginary. Okay, it's going to have both real and imaginary parts. And the imaginary part will be similar to the previous imaginary part, that it will regulate the wavelength and propagation velocity. This, by the way, is the propagation velocity. And there is a corresponding wavelength lambda, which is 2 pi over beta. Okay? So we are going to acquire from this new guy, this is going to be effectively a complex number with a real part plus j times the imaginary part. We can write it like this. Going to be alpha plus j beta. We will be using alpha to refer to the real part of this. I have to give this guy a name now, okay? This guy was a wave number, and this could be called complex wave number. Just like omega in ECE 210 is the radian frequency, but then when you go to the Laplace transform idea, instead of just omega, you deal with sigma plus j omega. And you have a complex frequency. We call that complex frequency, didn't we? Funny thing, right? And that S had a real part that had to do with exponential decay and an imaginary part that had to do with oscillation. We are stumbling into a similar situation here, okay? We have a complex quantity here that we can call the complex wave number that is going to have a real wave number, which happens to be the imaginary part of the complex wave number. That may be confusing, but that is exactly analogous to omega being the imaginary part of the complex frequency S in ECE 210, so it's not so foreign in that sense. And then there is that alpha, and alpha is going to give us exponential decay factors. Answering Alex's question, fields are going to decay exponentially, and then when you calculate pointing fluxes, they are just products of fields, and they will also, when you multiply two exponentials, they are still an exponential, and that will also be decaying. Power is going to be decreasing exponentially. Any questions here? And that is one of the equations. The other equation of importance is, of course, this equation, and that our eta now will become square root of mu divided by epsilon plus sigma over j omega. And what used to be a purely real number in the past, intrinsic impedance, that related the amplitude of E and H, and being a purely real number, it always meant that E and H are in phase. If one is a cosine-varying thing, the other thing is also a cosine-varying thing. If one is a cosine-varying thing with a 30-degree phase shift, the other thing is also a cosine-varying thing with a 30-degree phase shift. But that no longer is going to be true. Okay? So, and then in the long run, while the complex wave number is best expressed like this, as a complex number in rectangular form, it becomes useful to think of the complex number eta as in the exponential rather than rectangular form. So it has a real valued magnitude, obviously. Every complex number has a magnitude. And it also has some phase angle, j tau. So I define here, effectively, the magnitude with the obvious notation and a phase angle associated with complex eta. Any questions now? So we tend to think of then the complex wave number or propagation constants in terms of a rectangular representation of complex number and the other in the exponential form. So now we have reached some equations that are showing up in our notes. So it looks like maybe we are half a lecture behind. Actually, we are one lecture ahead because we already did the circular polarizations, right? There is a circular polarization lecture nominally that should be appearing tomorrow, but we are completely finished with that. So we are actually ahead of the game, all right? All right, so now we have reached basically the two equations that are shown on the screen. They are written slightly in a different form. I have pulled out the j omega, but they are the same equations, okay? Any questions now to our derivation? So these are exact. We will be typically not using these equations in their exact forms, but they are convenient approximations in different regimes, which are shown in a table at the beginning of the next lecture, and let me show you the table, all right? But once in a while, we will go back to the exact equations. The reason for this is the approximation equations are only valid if certain conditions are fulfilled. But sometimes you are right in between the two conditions that belong to two different approximations. Neither approximation is good. Then you have to go to the full equations. And how do you use the full equations? Well, it's a complex number. Use your calculator. Now, you can always punch in the ingredients, whatever, the inputs, and your calculator or computer will give you a complex number with real and imaginary parts, and you can use it. So until now, we had no calculators allowed in the exam. So in exam number 3, we will allow calculators. All right? So you can do the homework with calculators and come to the exam with a calculator. And in C350, calculators are allowed. So now you are transiting into a new phase in your life. Okay? So now, these are sort of like interesting equations. And another interesting thing is that if those two equations, one for gamma and the other for eta, if you multiply or divide them, they simplify. Okay? Eta times gamma leads to the cancellation of the sigma plus j omega terms. And it simply gives you, eta times gamma is simply j omega mu. Now, if you divide that, this time the j omega mu's cancel out. And what's left is sigma plus j omega epsilon. So then it's worth noting this relationship because you can go backwards. And you can also do something interesting with them, okay? You can say, hey, if I don't know what mu is, but in an experiment I determine what gamma and eta are, I can get my mu by solving this equation. And similarly, you can conclude for sigma and epsilon to reach these equations which are shown in the margin. From those two relationships, we can get mu to be the ratio on the top, and then sigma and epsilon correspond to real and imaginary parts of the gamma to eta ratio. One of them has also a division by omega. These are interesting, useful things, because if you actually go in the lab and observe a wave that is decaying away inside a lossy medium, you can determine the wavelength, you can measure the wavelength, you can measure the exponential constant by which the amplitude is dropping, and I should show you some pictures that sort of like make that clear. So then you can get the real and imaginary part of gamma, then you have the gamma, complex number gamma. And eta, for eta, well, you have to look at the E and H magnitudes as well as maybe a phase shift between them. With those you can construct eta, and then you can get these constants. So these constants, of course, we know how to get them in the lab using inductors and capacitors, as we have seen in some homework problems. But this is yet another methodology, if you wish. Any questions here? Okay, so then we do have, when we have our gamma to be when our gamma turns out to be a complex number with a real part alpha plus j times imaginary part beta, our solutions e to the minus n plus gamma, let's follow one of them, e to the minus gamma becomes, and this is this times the polarization in x direction, this is my electric field, let us say, is going to be, and we need a z here for propagation, minus alpha plus j beta z, and I can write this as follows, e to the minus alpha z, e to the minus j beta z. By seeing a e to the minus j beta z, I recognize to be propagating in the plus z direction and not minus. But then I have this real quantity, e to the minus alpha z, which is equal to 1 at z equal to 0. But at z equals 1, 2, 3, 4 meters, it is much less than 1, okay? In fact, it is going to be dropping down, having a characteristic penetration distance. Now it's a good time to define penetration distance. We define delta to be 1 over alpha and call it the penetration distance, okay? When you propagate one penetration distance, your e to the minus alpha z becomes e to the minus 1, and e to the minus 1 is what we call e-fold, 1 e-fold, okay? You drop to 37% or whatever e to the 1 over e gives you, right? 2.7, inverse of 2.7 is like 37%, that's it. And then if you have 5 e-folds, 5 consecutive e-folds, e to the minus 5, that's a number less than 1%. So a lot of engineers say the thing is dead by then, okay? It's not dead, of course, but it's dead compared to what we started with, okay? So penetration distance, keep that in mind, okay? So then, but this is still a phasor. Why don't we go to the time domain? Akash, how do we go to the time domain from the phasor? We multiply it with? Say it. Akash, nobody else, you. How do you go from a phasor into the time domain? Okay, time is up. You say it.
Eg omega c.
And take the real part. Yeah. Why didn't you say this? Are you shy or did you not know the answer? You forgot. You can't afford forgetting stuff. You know? All right. So we're gonna then do this. Let's make this more specific. Let's call this electric field phasor by putting an equality here. And since it's a vector, we are putting our unit vector here and even volts per meter. Otherwise, you will lose 1 point, okay? All right, so now what is the corresponding time and space-varying electric field? Then this vector, no longer tilde, is equal to the real part of the phasor with tilde times e to the j omega t. And then when we substitute this into here, I get the following. First of all, this is a real thing. E to the minus alpha z is a fully real thing. It just pulls out, comes to the front. So out in the front, we have x hat e to the minus alpha z, and the rest is e to the j omega t marries with e to the minus j beta z, and when we take its real part, it becomes our cosine function, cosine of omega t minus beta z, okay? So this is a damped wave, okay? It's a wave because we have this part. This part is going to wiggle and travel in the usual sense, okay? But then its amplitude is not 1. Okay, in lossless media, in vacuum, something like this always propagated at all locations with the same amplitude unity. In this case, that is dependent on Z. Okay? And that, of course, becomes those pictures that you see. We call this guy is the envelope of this damp wave. Cosine omega t minus beta z is the carrier in action. And the top figure is a snapshot at t equals 0 as a function of beta. And the second plot shows the same snapshot plus another snapshot that comes a little bit later on in time. As the peak moves forward, its amplitude drops. Okay, the fields are continuously losing energy into the medium because they are, you know, they are driving the acceleration of charged particles, which do not radiate back into the field because these things not at the same frequency. They bang, it becomes heat. Heat is a broadband thing. It's not coherent with what is coming in. Any questions? So don't forget the physics. The amplitude is dropping because the charge carriers are banging and they are heating up the system. And a system that is heating up will obviously have some interesting consequences that we are not talking about right now, but those consequences are the generation of noise. Okay? Something that is absorbing energy in this sense is going to maintain random charge motions of any type. And we already know from this course, the glimpse of the idea that moving charges, accelerating charges radiate, they're going to then radiate at all frequencies, filling the spectrum with what we call thermal noise. Okay? In 350, we studied this a little bit more carefully, and then in some number of senior courses, really seriously. 459, the communication course, and 453, RF circuits course, really takes into account these noise effects. But resistance and noise are hand in hand, okay? There is a theorem called fluctuation dissipation theorem. Anything that dissipates will also fluctuate in some sense. And resistance is a dissipation process, right? Okay, so every resistor will be source of noise in your circuitry, okay? And you cannot build circuits without resistors. So all your amplifiers, etc., are going to have noise that you wish it wasn't there, but it will be there, and you will have to design for it. Some of the design tricks are in these courses, 453, for instance. Any questions? Okay, so then everybody understand that there is alpha corresponding a damping. You can think of alpha as a damping coefficient. Beta is your wave number. Alpha plus j beta is your complex wave number or complex propagation constant. Any questions? All right, so now let us develop some of these approximate equations that are useful. So here, for the record, here we give the full thing with the, if you ask, what is the propagation velocity? Well, propagation velocity is alpha over omega divided by beta. What is beta? Beta is the imaginary part of that awful looking gamma. So there you go. Propagation velocity is this awful looking thing. But you can actually compute it with your calculator, all right? So the important thing is that it is not any longer independent of omega. If sigma were equal to zero here, then there would be omega square root from the bottom, canceling omega from the top. We would have our good old 1 over square root of mu epsilon propagation velocity, which is the same for all frequencies, assuming omega, epsilon, and mu are independent of frequency, but no longer the case. This is a dispersive situation. Different frequencies propagate with different velocities, and because of this, D'Alembert solutions are not possible, and this is why we went into the frequency domain, okay? All right, so that's a general statement that deserves some attention. Wavelength. Wavelength comes from this portion. This portion is still the same in terms of beta. So lambda is 2 pi over beta. And what is lambda now? Well, it is the distance between the zero crossings of this damp wave, okay? Because of the exponential decay, maybe it is not so accurate to say that it is the distance between successive peaks, Alright, so there might be a little shift, but certainly the zero crossings are not being influenced. That's the wavelength. And then we have our attenuation constant, alpha, inverse of which is our penetration depth, delta. And that is also given there in its full glorious detail. If you wanna, if you don't want to use an approximate equation, you have to use this full equation.
Okay, so now I want to sort of develop these things.
Okay, so let me start. Let me work on the blackboard, deriving various rows of that equation, of table. So in this row, in this table, we have four rows. And they are perfectly electric, imperfectly electric, good conductor, perfect conductor. These are four situations, okay? A given material transmitting a given frequency wave may not be in any of these categories. So there is in-betweens. Then you use the full equations. But oftentimes, things will be well represented by these, so it is worth developing these equations.
So there are conditions, that's the second column. And then the specialized formula for beta, alpha, magnitude of eta, tau, which is the angle of the intrinsic impedance, also some specialized formulae for lambda and penetration depth. Okay? Don't memorize this. Be aware of its existence. Use it as necessary. Let's look at where these things are coming from.
Okay, so my equation for gamma that I lost over there. J omega square root of mu epsilon plus sigma over J omega. Okay. So under certain circumstances, I should develop reasonable approximations for this equation. And one of them will be, if this first term dominates over the second term, that allows me to interpret the square root that is applied on this combo in a sort of a series, first two terms of the series way. That is something I can do. And I will consider that to be an imperfect dielectric rather than a good conductor. If it is a good conductor, this term dominates over this term. If it is a dielectric, but imperfect dielectric, you can call it a lousy dielectric, or you can call it lossy dielectric, however you want to think about it. This dominates over this. That doesn't mean that you can neglect this, but you can expand this in a sort of a recognition of the second term is small compared to the first one. Let us just do that, okay? So my first case is case one. That is row two, so let me call it row two, okay? This is an imperfect dielectric case. I basically pull out mu and epsilon and separate it from that other square root. So gamma becomes j times square root of mu epsilon. And then what is left is the following, square root of 1 plus sigma divided by j omega epsilon, this square root. In this square root, I have 1 and something else. I consider in this case that something else to be much smaller than unity. So imperfect dielectric is then means that sigma over omega epsilon is much, much less than 1. If that is the case, then I can say 1 plus a to the p power is 1 plus pa, okay? As a good approximation, the first two terms of the series expansion, okay? As long as a is in magnitude much, much less than 1. Okay, so this is a good approximation formula to remember and use. Okay, if we apply that to here, this guy is 1 plus sigma over j omega epsilon raised to the power 1 half. P is 1 half. Okay, so I can say this is equal to 1 plus 1 half. Okay, and let me bring this j upstairs so it becomes a minus. So I then put the minus sign here. J comes upstairs, sigma over omega epsilon. Okay, so now this combo is my complex gamma. Now, I say, hey, I am going to first multiply this imaginary number 1
And then this imaginary number multiplied with this one is no longer going to be imaginary because there's going to be a j squared. And what is j squared? Minus 1. And it will get rid of that minus sign and turn it into a plus sign. Okay? Here is therefore my alpha plus j beta. Okay? So this is j times... I forgot something here. There was an omega here. Thank you for pointing it out. Okay? So... I have this plus, now let's see what happens. This omega is going to cancel this omega, and j's will disappear. I will have 1/2, now omega has disappeared. There's going to be, and then I think it's going to be square root of mu over epsilon multiplying sigma 1/2. That's all I see there. If somebody else sees something else, please point out. Anybody else seeing something else I missed? Jason? Is it okay? I think I'm okay. So that's it. Here is my beta. This is my beta. And this is my alpha. And there is an approximation here because I use this approximation over there in expanding thing. Okay? So what did we find? For this imperfect dielectric case, we found a beta whose formula gives me the old formula of the lossless case. Okay? But I have to admit that there is an alpha which is not zero. And that alpha which is not zero is actually the product of beta. This is, after all, beta times a small quantity. Therefore, that alpha is much smaller in magnitude than beta. What that means that cosinusoid is going to change with a rapid rate, with position, with distance. That means that the wavelength is going to be short. Okay, but alpha being small compared to beta, inverse alpha, that is the penetration distance, is going to be quite large. Okay, so the wave is going to do many oscillations before you start noticing the exponential decay of its amplitude, and that is the nature of this imperfect dielectric. All right, so I think then if we bring down the screen, we have recovered some of the formulae that is pertinent for that, the second column. Okay? Here's our condition. Our beta effectively is the same as perfect dielectric. The first row is the perfect dielectric. In the perfect dielectric, sigma is equal to zero. Beta is rock solid omega square root of mu epsilon. And there is no alpha. Eta is rock solid square root of mu over epsilon. And there is no tau, and everything is as you expect. In this imperfect dielectric, we get the same beta. We get also effectively the same eta, but we get a tiny little phase angle, which we can sort of ignore because it is such a small number. Sigma over omega epsilon is going to be much less than 1 by our assumption, so that phase angle can usually be ignored in this context, but not when the good conductor approximation comes about. And that's more or less the story. And how do I get the eta? Well, I sort of like visit this equation, square root of mu divided by j sigma over j omega, okay? And because this guy dominates over this guy, for magnitude, I don't worry about it. And I just, that's the magnitude of eta that comes. But for as far as phase angle is concerned, well, there is a phase angle of the bottom. I can write this in an exponential fashion, and the phase angle is the imaginary over real arctangent, isn't it? From there on, then if I had the phase angle of the denominator, I can get the phase angle of the numerator because it just flipped. The denominator's phase angle flips to the numerator with a minus sign. And then I have a square root, and that would reduce an exponent by a factor of 2. And I have an arctangent, but that arctangent is acting on a very small quantity, and a very small quantity is arctangent is equal to itself in radians. That is how I got that equation, okay? All those details are given in the notes. I'm not going through. I think you should look at it, so be comfortable in doing this sort of calculation or derivation, okay? So unless there is any insistence that I go through those, I'm not going to go through that. And we have our full set of equations. Remember, imperfect dielectric means, for all practical purposes, you are using the good old perfect dielectric equation, except for there is an alpha. You do recognize that there is a gradual exponential decay. So somebody will ask you, what is the penetration depth?
He says, okay, God, I have to go to that column and or row and find my alpha, and then I have to invert my alpha. But that alpha is actually, the way I have written here, is sort of easy to remember, okay? Let's erase this, because square root of mu over epsilon is simply eta, okay? So think of it, half the product of sigma and eta. Why is this easy to remember? Because sigma and eta are both related, what are their units? Sigma is Siemens per meter. What about eta? Ohm. And what is Siemens the old way? Mo. So it's an ohm times mo per meter. Ohm times mo, they eat each other, one, they become nothing, it's per meter. And alpha should be per meter because it is describing attenuation with distance. And what is the inverse of per meter? Meter. And so inverse of alpha, which is delta penetration depth, it has a meter units. Okay? So in that sense, maybe you will remember this after all this clowning that I just did here. One half sigma eta. Alright? Sigma is the conductivity of the medium and eta is the sort of intrinsic impedance measured in ohms, so that's the way it is. Now, suppose that, let's look at some penetration depth. Suppose that we were in this regime, okay, and suppose this is our alpha, and suppose we are in a copper. What is the conductivity of copper? Something times 10 to the 7 Siemens per meter. Let's call it 10 to the 8, okay? What is eta? Eta, well, eta is, what is it in free space? 377, something like 400. It's not going to be much different. So it is 400, let's make it 100, 10 to the 2. We have 10 to the 8 and 10 to the 2. We are up to 10 to the 10. Or maybe we overestimate it. Let's say 10 to the 9. Okay, because I'm going to invert this 10 to the 9. This is alpha. When I invert it, it becomes my penetration depth. And the inverse of 10 to the 9 is 10 to the minus 9, which is a nanometer, which is sort of like, more or less, on the order of the size of atoms. Okay? So if you are in copper, and if you are in this regime, you are going to be decaying with a penetration depth on the order of a few nanometers. Okay? Few layers of atoms, and your field amplitude has decayed. Okay? And five of them, maybe five layers of atoms, or 50 of them, it's gone. The field is gone. So copper is an extremely good shielder. All right, so it eats away any incident field internally. It doesn't even let much of it penetrate. It effectively reflects most of it out. Okay, it takes in so little that there isn't much loss that takes place. Whatever comes in hits the surface goes back with very little attenuation. So it's a good reflector. It is copper, aluminum, silver. These are very good reflectors. We can oftentimes pretend they are perfect reflectors, PECs. In which case there would be absolutely no penetration. In this case, some penetration, but very weak. And because of that, for copper, because this penetration depth is so thin, the other word that is used to refer to penetration depth is skin depth, okay? Basically what is implied that when a field comes, there is just a skin of electrical fields, and that's it. It's only in the skin. Everything else is reflected back. Any questions here? Now, if we apply the, of course, this imperfect dielectric condition is very hard to satisfy for copper because sigma is so large. You have to go to very large frequencies to have sigma over omega epsilon to be much less than 1, okay? Very high frequencies. So copper really is better described by this row, the third row that we haven't looked at, good conductor row, which we are going to come subsequently. Now, what about seawater? Seawater conductivity is about 4 Siemens per meter. So instead of 10 to the 8, it is 4. Let's say that eta is eta, okay? So eta times 4 is, let's say 100, 400 or something like that. We invert that, we get our skin depth. What is the skin depth? Let's say 100. 10 to the minus 2 meters, okay? And that is still very small, okay? That is still very small, which is terrible news for propagation or communication between submarines that are submerged in salty water, okay? You don't want to be working in the imperfect dielectric case to communicate. Actually, the condition that we have here, either this or this, is frequency dependence. For any given material, you can find frequencies in which you are either in this regime or in this regime. So it works out. It is a better choice if you're going to be doing communications between submarines to find yourself in the good conductor regime by lowering your frequency and then using this formula to calculate your penetration distance, damping constant, and therefore inverting it to get the penetration distance, okay? So you're going to have a homework problem that is related to that. Any questions here? Okay, so let's move on. And I want to do the next case, good conductor case. Okay, so let me push this J omega inside, okay? When I push J omega inside, it becomes J omega quantity square, okay? So then it becomes square root of J omega mu multiplying now sigma plus J omega epsilon. This term acquires this. This is what I need to work with, okay? This time, I'm saying the sigma is the dominant one, not the epsilon term, but the sigma, okay? And I am going to simply neglect the existence of this, all right? I will not even do a series expansion like I did last time, okay? Last time, if I said sigma is equal to zero, okay, that would have been collapsing back all the way to the lossless case, okay? Then that would not be good enough of an approximation. Here, by neglecting this, I still am in a new regime, okay? In the previous one, if we had killed the term with sigma, we would not be in a new regime. It would be the good old regime. Therefore, that would be a useless exercise. Here, I can do this and have my simplest approximation that is relevant. Now, some of you may be more ambitious, and you may say, hey, let us pull this out and then apply the square root formula, approximation formula, to what remains. You can do that. You can get a more accurate formula than the one that I'm just about to get, but it is also longer, okay, and it is not so practical, useful, all right? You always have your calculator to do the exact calculation. The important thing is coming up with the simplest approximate formula that you have some chance of remembering, okay? So that is what I'm after. So if I do that, okay, I neglect this, then what do I encounter here? I encounter the following. Let me then separate square root of J, and then I have the square root of omega. It's 2 pi f. And then there is mu, and then there is sigma. Okay? So this is leading towards a rather easy equation to remember for the following reason. What is the square root of J? Akash, what is the square root of J? I'm picking on you now. Okay, I'm going to help you. J, so whenever nasty people ask you nasty questions like this, always go to the graphical form. That is J. Always think about complex numbers in terms of their graphical representation. This is J. This is 1. I claim that square root of J is somewhere on this circle. I think it is exactly this location. If I can write this down, the square root of that becomes J. All right? Do you agree with that, Akash? You did that? Get it? Why not?
The square root of J would be...
Okay, so this is J. What that means is J, 0 plus J. 0 plus J is J. 0 plus J1, that is J. This, let us now look, its magnitude is 1. Its angle is 45 degrees. If you wish, it is 1 at 45 degrees. If you square 1 at 45 degrees, what does it become? That you can answer, Akash. What is the square of 1 at 45 degrees? This is 210 material. How do you multiply complex number in exponential form? You multiply their magnitudes, and you add their phase angles. So what is the square of a number is some number being multiplied by itself. So what is the square of 1 at a degree of 45 degrees? You say it, hear it. Because it's 1 at 90 degrees. And 1 at 90 degrees is J. Okay? Akash, think about this. Think about... Alright, so, but 1 at 45 degrees, I can also write it in a rectangular form. It's clearly 1 unit this way, 1 unit this way. But I have to normalize it, right? It's not 1 plus J. It's 1 plus J divided by square root. Okay, of course, there is another one. This is also square root of J, right? There are two, plus and minus. But we decided early on to not worry about plus and minuses because we put that plus and minus into the exponent itself. And let's say we said, let's always work with the positive root, and that's what we are going to follow. So I ignore this guy, okay? So this guy is then 1 plus J divided by square root of 2. Now, this square root of 2 will cancel out this square root of 2. So this goes away, this goes away. Therefore, my gamma evidently is alpha plus J beta, where alpha and beta are the same. This is alpha plus J beta, and alpha equals beta equals square root of pi f mu sigma. Okay? Pi f mu sigma square root is a rememberable formula, because everything under the sun is showing up there except for epsilon, and epsilon you pushed away by saying, well, this is a good conductor, epsilon has no business in being involved. That's what you said. Okay, when epsilon goes away, the only remaining parameters are mu and sigma, and frequency should be there, and pi also shows up. Any questions? And I have a meeting to go to. That becomes the formula that we see here. You see, alpha and beta have the same formula. I stop here. We finish this table and move on tomorrow.